Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC, and we'll talk to the makers of the war movie The Hurt Locker in about 5 minutes, but I want to play an extended excerpt from President Obama's speech from the memorial at Fort Hood yesterday for the victims of the shooting there. He made a point of naming and doing a short profile of each victim, and we found it very personal and very moving and very appropriate for this Veterans Day. So here's about 4.5 minutes of President Obama shouting out to the victims by name at Fort Hood.
Chief Warrant Officer Michael Cahill had served in the National Guard and worked as a physician's assistant for decades. A husband and father of three, he was so committed to his patients that on the day he died, he was back at work just weeks after having had a heart attack. Major Libardo Eduardo Cavarello spoke little English when he came to America as a teenager, but he put himself through college, earned a PhD, and was helping combat units cope with the stress of deployment. He's survived by his wife, sons, and stepdaughters. Staff Sergeant Justin DeCrow joined the Army right after high school, married his high school sweetheart, and had served as a light wheeled mechanic and satellite communications operator. He was known as an optimist, a mentor, and a loving husband and father. After retiring from the Army as a major, John Gaffney cared for society's most vulnerable during 2 decades as a psychiatric nurse. He spent 3 years trying to return to active duty in this time of war, and he was preparing to deploy to Iraq as a captain. He leaves behind a wife and son. Specialist Frederick Green was a Tennessean who wanted to join the Army for a long time and did so in 2008 with the support of his family. As a combat engineer, he was a natural leader, and he is survived by his wife and 2 daughters. Specialist Jason Hunt was also recently married with 3 children to care for. He joined the Army after high school, did a tour in Iraq, and it was there that he reenlisted for 6 more years on his 21st birthday so that he could continue to serve. Staff Sergeant Amy Kruger was an athlete in high school, joined the Army shortly after 9/11, and had since returned home to speak to students about her experience. When her mother told her she couldn't take on Osama bin Laden by herself, Amy replied, "Watch me." Private First Class Aaron DeMelka was an Eagle Scout who just recently signed up to do one of the most dangerous jobs in the service, defuse bombs, so that he could help save lives. He was proudly carrying on a tradition of military service that runs deep within his family. Private First Class Michael Pearson loved his family and loved his music, and his goal was to be a music teacher. He excelled at playing the guitar and could create songs on the spot and show others how to play. He joined the military a year ago and was preparing for his first deployment. Captain Russell Seeger worked as a nurse for the VA, helping veterans with post-traumatic stress. He had extraordinary respect for the military and signed up to serve so that he could help soldiers cope with the stress of combat and return to civilian life. He leaves behind a wife and son. Private Francesca Velez, daughter of a father from Colombia and a Puerto Rican mother, had recently served in Korea and in Iraq and was pursuing a career in the Army. When she was killed, she was pregnant with her first child and was excited about becoming a mother. Lieutenant Colonel Juanita Warmer was the daughter and granddaughter of Army veterans. She was a single mom who put herself through college and graduate school and served as a nurse practitioner while raising her 2 daughters. She also left behind a loving husband. Private First Class Cam Gong came to America from Thailand as a small child. He was a husband and father who followed his brother into the military because his family had a strong history of service. He was preparing for his first deployment to Afghanistan. These men and women came from all parts of the country. Some had long careers in the military. Some had signed up to serve in the shadow of 9/11. Some had known intense combat in Iraq and Afghanistan, and some cared for those who didn't. Their lives speak to the strength, the dignity, the decency of those who serve. And that's how they will be remembered.
Not just part of a group of victims, but individuals with names and life stories. Each had a unique experience of the current conflicts in Iraq and Afghanistan. President Obama going for the personal stories at Fort Hood in that memorial speech yesterday. And for most of us, it's hard to imagine what being a soldier, especially during wartime, really means. Watching war movies is the closest that many of us will get to seeing what war is like. The Hurt Locker is a film in current release set in Baghdad in 2004. It follows a three-man army bomb squad whose job it is to defuse improvised explosive devices, probably the most dangerous job in the world. Here's a clip.
You're the guy in the flaming car, Sergeant James.
Good afternoon, sir.
Yes, sir. You're a wild man, you know that?
Yes,
sir. He's a wild man. You know that? Why don't you shake your hand?
Thank you, sir.
Yeah. How many bombs have you disarmed?
I'm not quite sure, sir.
Sergeant.
Yes.
Ask your question.
873, sir.
873. 873.
They're counting today, sir, yes.
That's got to be a record. What's the best way to go about disarming one of these things?
The way you don't die, sir.
That's a good one. That's spoken like a wild man. That's good.
Clip from The Hurt Locker. And joining me now are Catherine Bigelow, who directed The Hurt Locker. She also directed Point Break, if you saw that. And Mark Boll, a journalist and the screenwriter of The Hurt Locker. Catherine, Mark, welcome to WNYC. Thanks so much for coming on with us on Veterans Day.
Hi. Thank you for having us.
Hello.
Catherine, this is a movie about a three-man explosive ordnance disposal team. What do they do? Why did you decide to tell this story through the lens of this Army bomb squad?
Well, first of all, we were so fortunate to have the benefit of Mark Boll's journalistic embed in 2004, where he spent several weeks with the bomb squad in Baghdad, and the opportunity to make a movie out of firsthand observation was pretty inspiring and pretty compelling as an entry point for, you know, a very dramatic story set in this conflict.
And, Mark, you were, as Catherine said, embedded with the Army in the early days of the war. You were with an Army team that did this, that defused IEDs in Baghdad. What was it like covering that?
It was a very calm, relaxing experience.
Yeah.
No, I mean, in
day
retrospect, yeah, day at the beach. In retrospect, and of course you didn't know this at the time, it was one of the bloodier periods of the war, and bombs. I mean, I'm gratified to see that Baghdad is much quieter and more peaceful now. But as we, you know, remember in 2004, bombs were going off all the time, and 10 or 15 or 20 bombs in a day in that city, and so it was chaotic and relentless. And we tried to capture some of the tension of that experience in the film in a fictional setting, and you know, tell a story that would hopefully be a little bit eye-opening for people that weren't able to see what I saw.
Listeners, we only have a few minutes, but I wonder if there are any veterans who saw The Hurt Locker, especially veterans of Iraq, but you can be any veterans. Did you see The Hurt Locker, and what did you think from that perspective? 212-433-WNYC. We just have a few minutes, so if any of you happen to be listening who are Iraq war vets or other war vets and have a quick take on The Hurt Locker, 212-433-WNYC. New Yorker writer George Packer wrote that The Hurt Locker turned out to be the first good movie about the Iraq war that he had seen. He also said it's not really an Iraq war movie, it's just a war movie. Here's another clip. This is a scene in the barracks with the three main characters.
What do we have here?
They're, you know, bomb parts, signatures.
Yeah, I see that, but what are they doing under your bed?
Well, there's one. This one. From the UN building. Flaming car. Dead man's switch. Boom. This guy was good. I like him. This one, y'all, is from our first call together. This box is full of stuff that almost killed me.
What about this one? Where's this one from, Will?
It's my wedding ring. Like I said, stuff that almost killed me.
So the main character there, Staff Sergeant James, is the one in that clip collecting bomb parts from IEDs that he has defused. He's a man of few words, sort of a renegade soldier who feeds off the adrenaline rush of this crazy job. And, Mark, a lot of the public dialogue about the psychology of soldiers focuses justifiably on PTSD, post-traumatic stress disorder, but were you also trying to get at the notion that it's not just trauma that soldiers experience, but also an addictive kind of rush?
Well, I think there's something to the way you frame that. I think that for anybody that has been in a war, it's an unforgettable experience, and it becomes one of life's most, in many cases, defining experiences that you can have because it's so epic and intense. So trauma can be part of that, but also I think there can be a sense of satisfaction of having taken part in something larger than yourself, and also exhilaration, which is which goes to your point, and which is part of the bomb work. It's exciting work, and it's important work, and to a certain personality type, that can become that cocktail of excitement and importance can become very alluring. And when you're talking about guys that go back year after year, as you know, this war has been going on at least in Iraq for 6 years. So you have that repeated exposure. It can be, in a way, addictive. Yeah.
Alan in the Bronx is a Vietnam vet who saw the Hurt Locker. Hi, Alan.
Good morning, Brian. How are you?
Good.
I, as I told your screener, I have never seen a movie anything like that. I mean, the typical war movie is about the war. This one was about the soldiers, and you know, it actually told the truth. When you're looking at, they were having a conversation, and the bomb, the guy who actually defused the bombs, he went out of, they were destroying some ammo, and he went out to do it. And the two guys who were waiting by the truck said to one another, you know, we really ought to kill that SOB. And they really thought about it, and you could tell they were thinking about it. But he was truly addicted to what he did. So even after he left,
don't give away the ending.
He went right.
No spoilers. But we get your point, Alan. And Alan, thank you for your service to our country.
But it was truly wonderful.
Thank you
for doing this, Brian.
Thank you very much. And Catherine, you know, another person who saw the film said to me, you know, the war itself is almost a backdrop. It's really about these three men trying to do a hard job under difficult circumstances. That's part of what Alan was getting to. But my friend, she said, you know, it's almost about any three people trying to do a difficult job under difficult circumstances. Do you want to generalize all the way out there, or do you really want to kind of keep it specific to this war?
Oh, I think it's, you know, I look at it as a real kind of a tremendous character study that Mark has crafted, and I think that these are you know, are very specific individuals with specific jobs, and yet at the same time you can extrapolate, you know, as far as one would imagine. I think they're really rich, resonant characters that are not difficult to identify with.
And it is an action movie. Very entertaining action movie. You have the inherent drama of war, the classic action movie tension over which wire to cut when defusing a bomb. You have big, beautiful explosions. You have a strong, fearless hero who saves the day again and again. So here's one of these action sequences from early in the film.
Nice and hot in here. Okay, I'm laying on the charge. Nice and sweet. I'm coming back.
Twenty-five
meters, roger that.
Butcher shop, 2 o'clock, dude has a phone!
Why is Eldridge running? Come on, guys, talk to me.
Drop the phone! Drop your phone!
Hey, Brody!
I can't get a shot!
And I should mention that part of the proceeds from the Hurt Locker go toward raising funds for the families of EOD technicians wounded or killed in battle. But, Mark, how do you keep it from being war pornography, even while trying to make the points that you're making in this story?
Well, I'm not sure what that would be, but to me, if you are
just people getting off on the action and the violence and, you know, going to it for that reason.
Well, I think what it does is show you a side of the war that maybe you wouldn't be able to see on the news. And I think there's value to that. And I don't think that that's mutually exclusive from making something that's entertaining. And hopefully you are entertained and also and maybe a little shaken by the film, but also hopefully you leave the theater saying, hey, that was a pretty good movie, but it makes you think a little bit too.
Director Kathryn Bigelow, just 10 seconds on that same question, then we're out of time.
My hope is that it makes you think, as well as remind you that even to this day, there are still men and women out there risking their life in Iraq and Afghanistan.
The Hurt Locker, we thank screenwriter Michael Boal and Mark Boal and director Kathryn Bigelow, still in theaters. Thank you both very, very much.
Thank you.
Thank you, Brian.
And again, we honor all the veterans on this Veterans Day. Talk to you tomorrow. Brian Lehrer on WNYC.